Hi, Seth Belizarian on the heart.org and Practitioner's Corner on Medscape. Today there's a release of guidelines which are new and long awaited. Guidelines update ATP4 finally is the title of this blog. The ACC and AHA in combination with NHLBI have released four new guidelines: the cholesterol management guidelines, a risk assessment guideline, obesity and lifestyle recommendations. ACC and AHA have been collaborating for a long time on guidelines. I learned that they started collaborating in 1980 with the first guideline, a pacemaker guideline released in 1984. So they've been at this for a very long time, almost 30 years. We've been waiting for ATP4 since ATP3 was released in 2001. It's an incredibly long time with a lot of time has elapsed. Over 12 years have we been waiting for it. Just to remind you, in 2001, President George Bush II was president. We had a 9/11 attack. The United States began its invasion of Afghanistan. Wikipedia came online and Napster closed down. And the first iPod was released in 2001. So we've come a really long way since 2001 in many ways, but unfortunately the guidelines were not advanced. Is, of course, in the lipid field, there's been multiple statin trials since 2001. HPS, PROVE-IT, ASCOT, PROSPER, All Hat, TNT, Ideal. And there's been several non-statin trials, two large niacin trials and two fibrate trials, and we're still waiting for an ezetimibe trial. So a lot of things have happened in the lipid field while we're waiting for it. And for community-based clinicians like myself trying to make best decisions for our patients, sort of stuck in the middle between trying to interpret the data and waiting for some kind of consensus guideline can be frustrating. For me, several persistent questions I've been waiting for answers to, and these guidelines answer some and leave me short in some areas. One question that has been brought up many times by many lipidologists is that the Framingham risk score, which ATP3 recommends we use to calculate risk, underestimates risk for women and for young patients. So is that something that I should continue to use with that deficiency? And of course, many people have used inflammatory markers as a strategy to help evaluate intermediate risk patients, particularly, of course, the CRP. What role for that? Others are enthusiastic about imaging, such as calcium scores and issues like carotid intima-medial thickness or ABIs or brachial reactivity. At the heart meetings in the exhibition hall, I always see vascular tonometry exhibits. How should I use these, or should I use them at all? And what role does patient preference play as we move more and more towards trying to be more patient-centric, and a patient who has a Framingham risk score in the intermediate range, 10 to 20%, is it completely up to them, or should we use some other strategies? And then the secondary prevention, what's the story with residual risk? This is a topic that's promoted by people who are motivated to sell non-statin therapies. Is that a legitimate thing to consider, or should that just be ignored? And what role, if any, should drugs like niacin and fibrates and ezetimibe and bile acid sequestrants have? These are questions that I've tried to make sense of in my own mind and was hoping we'd really have some answers. We have some in these new guidelines. And then, of course, other issues that come up are issues about the best approach for women, diabetics, metabolic syndrome patients. I think everyone is aware that there's poor data for statin benefit in chronic kidney disease. We have little data for transplant patients or HIV patients. What do we do with all those patients? And what do we do with these two new therapies for familial hypercholesterolemia, or FH? Hoping to get some guidance on that. So we've been waiting since 2001 from the NHLBI. This earlier this year in 2013, in June, actually, Medscape, the editor Shelley Wood, had a report that said that the NHLBI or NIH specifically had turned over the guideline writing to ACC-AHA after 11 years. So from June until now, it's just been 6 months since that notification. We now have guidelines, which is actually a great turnaround and a credit to ACC-AHA. And a dissatisfaction as a taxpayer with how long it took NIH to move to that more effective strategy. We were supposed to get JNC8, that was what was reported in June, but we don't have JNC8 with this announcement today. So ultimately, where are we and what's been changed? So the guidelines are being written a little bit differently, as has been reported. ACC-AHA are now using a little different style. It's not an extensive compendium, but they're focusing on specific questions, which should, of course, be better for clinicians in practice. They're trying to choose only the best trials. They're leaving a lot of questions unanswered. And it retains the same kind of listing with 1, 2A, 2B, and 3 in terms of the strengths listing with regard to their recommendations. There are four guidelines. Briefly, the obesity guidelines answered 5 questions. What's the health risk associated with obesity, and how do you calculate that based on using BMI and weight circumference, and how much weight loss is beneficial? And some questions are answered about what are the best diets, and what role for bariatric surgery are addressed in the obesity guidelines. In the cholesterol treatment guidelines, the ones I was most interested in and want to spend a few minutes talking about, they've basically promoted some new approaches, which I think will change a lot of the way primary care doctors and cardiologists practice. They've tried to identify 4 groups for statin therapy. Number 1, has the patient had a history of heart disease or stroke? If so, their secondary prevention, that's not a change. The second one, is their LDL over 190? They have familial hypercholesterolemia. That's a new concept for this update. And then 2 other groups, does the patient have diabetes age 40 to 75 and an LDL of 70 to 189? And then the 4th group is, does the patient have a global 10-year risk based on a new calculator that they are releasing today of greater than 7.5% over 10 years? And if so, that's another statin group. So they also have promoted this concept that is also new of high intensity, moderate intensity, and low intensity statin therapy. And they recommend high intensity and moderate intensity statins for some of these groups. Of those 4 groups I just mentioned, the first one being secondary prevention and LDL over 190, they're recommending high intensity statins. And for moderate intensity statins, they're recommending those for the diabetic patients and for those who are primary prevention, age 40 to 75, with a risk of greater than 7.5% in 10 years. They use the definition of high intensity they use is it lowers LDL by more than 50%. So easy to remember, that's just the 2 most potent statins, atorvastatin and rosuvastatin, at the top 2 doses for those 2 drugs. Moderate intensity statins are pretty much all the other statins except for the older statins at their lowest dose. So atorvastatin 10 or 20 is considered to be moderate. Rosuvastatin 5 or 10 is considered to be moderate. Simvastatin 20 to 40, pravastatin 40 to 80, lovastatin 40 are examples of moderate intensity statins. So the second thing that they've developed is a new calculator that's available at AmericanHeart.org and at the CardioSource website from ACC. So a calculator that we'll be able to go to and either download as an Excel spreadsheet, or presumably these people will quickly create smartphone apps so that we can enter this data. And hopefully they'll be integrated into our electronic medical records. They desired and have promoted this idea that they really don't have a quantitative risk, so you'll be able to tell your patient your number is 7.8%. They are attempting to endorse the concept that was promoted in ATP3 to match the absolute risk to the therapy that's designed for them. So there's a variety of other changes, and summary of guidelines that are 1, 2A, or 2B is that they're promoting a race and sex-specific equations. It's not clear from my reading of the document how we interpret the race issue. Obviously, for patients who maybe have mixed race, the sex-specific component I think is already available for us in Framingham Risk Score. They have given us some leeway if a patient, after quantitative risk assessment, still is uncertain in terms of their value of using statin therapy. They've cleared the path for some other strategies like family history, CRP, calcium score, or ABI, and the greatest endorsement is for calcium score. They also say it's reasonable for us to assess patients for primary prevention over 4 to 6 years when they're age 20 to 79. So those, I think, are the highlights of the cholesterol treatment issues. The cut points for those intermediate risk tiebreakers are family history, male less than 55 years old for first degree relatives, or female less than 65, so that's a little bit different than what we've had in the past. The CRP cut point is 2, the calcium score cut point is 30 Augustin units, and the ABI is 0.9. One strong recommendation is they recommend against carotid intimal-medial thickness, so that's out for the time being with regard to these new guidelines. So the major recommendations for statin therapy were secondary prevention for LDLs greater than 190, high intensity, unless their over 75 years old. So if a patient is secondary prevention or LDL over 190, high intensity statin, unless they're over 75, then moderate intensity statin. So that's a difference than I think, certainly the way I'm practicing. And for diabetics, they're recommending that it doesn't be equivalent to secondary prevention, and we just use secondary prevention guidelines, that we actually use a risk calculator, and if they have over 7.5%, then use a high intensity statin. Otherwise, diabetics should get a moderate intensity statin. And then primary prevention, age 40 to 75, use a moderate or high intensity statin if they're greater than 7.5%. And this whole moderate to high intensity statin approach is really another area that I think we're going to have to change. We're not treating to guidelines anymore. That is what their recommendation is, that we just give one of these therapies, and then presumably, I don't know what will happen. Do we even check LDL, or do we just leave it alone? They also omitted or have specifically not made a recommendation for systolic heart failure patients or hemodialysis patients. Again, they're not saying don't, they're not recommending, they're just not making any recommendation. There's another document for lifestyle recommendations, which I won't talk about because of time. But on this first blush, the biggest changes to my practice for these cholesterol guidelines are that we'll now need to evaluate diabetics and not equate them with secondary prevention goals. It was very easy previously. If you had any atherosclerosis that was identified, or you were diabetic, your secondary prevention, this will change that. So that complicates things a little bit. We're no longer treating to goals, so this implies that secondary prevention patients who have a very low LDL probably should not have their high-intensity statin reduced. That's not a practice of mine. If a patient who's several years out and has an LDL in the 40 or 50 range on a atorvastatin 80, my approach has been to reduce the statin for a reduced potential hazard for them. This seems to imply that that's not the current recommendation. There will also be issues for those of us in practice who are on the pay-for-performance guidelines, because for me, secondary prevention guidelines of an LDL less than 100 is part of the pay-for-performance guideline that I live under. So these are already antiquated. If a patient's on a high-intensity statin, theoretically, it would be the best approach based on the guideline. Another thing will be is how fast can these calculators be integrated into our practice through our electronic medical records. That will be some kind of cost and some kind of hassle that will have to be undertaken. In our practice, we don't use a lot of calcium scores. So since this seems to be the highest recommendation for intermediate risk patients to be risk stratified, we may have to reconsider that approach. The evidence guidelines, there's an evidence statement 7 in the appendix about heart failure. They're saying it should not be used because of a lack of evidence, and heart failure patients were excluded from trials. So should I discontinue statin therapy in a patient who's had a prior myocardial infarction who is a secondary prevention patient but has congestive heart failure? Not been my approach. I'm not sure what to do about that. And this sort of, in my mind, bolsters my approach, which has been to not use fibrates, niacin, or fish oil for the last several years due to the lack of effectiveness. So this document seems to bolster that position. So some new guidelines are going to take some time to digest these and make sense of them, but some different approaches, and I think the high intensity, low intensity, and not paying attention to the LDL as a treatment goal are really going to be something that's going to take some time for me to get my head around. Seth Bilazarian on theheart.org, thanks. Until next time, post a comment and tell me what you think about these. Have a good day.